I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Jay Cross.
Hi, Mark Packham.
How does it feel to have all the big dollar?
Oh, really good.
I know that you are a moneyed man.
Often.
And you've got the big bucks.
Okay.
Would you like to give some of that to me?
That's what I think about most of my time.
How would you like to exchange those big bucks in, you know, very small portions on a monthly basis?
So not loads of money?
No, just a very small amount.
Okay.
For, bear with me.
Yes.
Extra Guitar Nerds content.
Sounds really good, actually.
Well, I've got a service for you.
Tell me more.
Patreon.com/Guitar Nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, which I know you can afford.
I can, actually.
You can support the Guitar Nerds podcast.
What do you get?
You get, at the $1 tier, you get this podcast ad-free.
So you don't have to listen to annoying stuff like this.
Indeed.
Yes.
And you also get it early.
You do. Don't you also get the show notes that I write?
You do. You get some very, very in-depth show notes to talk you through all the products that we talk about each week.
They're not that in-depth, but...
They're good fun.
Yeah.
At $5 a month...
Okay.
You get all that...
Yes.
Plus an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds podcast every single week.
Is it only... an extra half hour?
Some weeks it is, but okay. A lot of weeks,
yes.
You'll also get things like nice interview content. So Matt Knight generally talking to some of the best pedal builders around the world, plus me talking to people doing stuff with guitars on the internet. And you'll also get access to the mini-series that we do.
Yes.
Things like Branton's Ranton.
Oh, no.
Where Joe Branton talks about the things that he hates.
Yes.
That's the $5 tier.
Yeah, tell me more.
That gives you access also to all the previous content. So at the moment, you're looking at about 70 to 80 hours.
That's too much.
It's basically the Netflix of cool guitar stuff.
I don't need that much Guitar Nerds.
You do. I think you do. But what you need more than that is the $10 a month tier.
Okay.
Where you get your name read out, listen, on the main Guitar Nerds podcast. This tier is actually locked at a certain number of people, but spots do come up from time to time. So
right.
If you want your name read out, keep checking that tier is available, because one day it will be. And you'll get your name read out by Joe Branton in a funny voice.
You're very mean.
Patreon.com/Guitar Nerds. It's the Netflix for Guitar Nerds stuff. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Hi, Mark, and hi, Matt.
Joe Branton this evening.
Wait, who?
Yeah, who's that again?
Who?
He is out at a wedding, I believe.
Wedding?
Not his own.
His wedding.
No, not his.
No.
That would be weird. Surely we'd be there.
I hope so.
The way that we've treated him.
I'll be washing my hair anyway.
Yeah.
He's going to schedule his wedding for a Monday so that he gets out of doing the podcast again.
Yeah,
and
100%.
We has an excuse for us not to be there.
Muse covers band.
Sorry, guys.
It would be some terrible math band playing, wouldn't it?
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well, what can you do?
In Joe Branton news, just quickly, I just wanted to read out an email before we get started. I know this is breaking the format. So, where was it? Alex says, anyone had any luck with Joe Branton's acting career? I've wasted an hour of my life looking at YouTube and on Google. If he was credited, his name was different. Well, I don't think he's credited.
I mean, he was like 9.
No, he's a bit older than that. I think he's like 12 or 13, something like that.
Right, okay. But probably not important enough to have an IMDb page.
He doesn't, as far as I can remember, because I've seen the clip, he doesn't speak. He probably isn't credited. I'll describe the scene. And for some reason, I've got a feeling it's either Demon Headmaster Series 2, Episode 4.
Why do you know
that? I don't know. Or it's Season 4, Episode
season 2. Okay.
It's one of, and it's a scene where a school bully is confronting the kids.
Is he a kid or is he a bully?
He's on the bully side.
Oh, so he's like Crab and Goyle.
Yeah, he's like the guy in the back.
Does he have a moustache at this point?
I don't think he does, which is why it may be difficult to recognise him. But saying it's the Demon Headmaster, it could also be Aquila. I just seem to remember it being Season 2, Episode 4. So it's one of those two shows, and it is it was definitely on YouTube about 18 months ago. It may have been taken down, but I don't know why someone would do that. But if you can find it and you can post a screenshot on the group, maybe we should send some sort of prize. The first person to find it and post a screenshot.
Alternatively, if any podcast listeners out there work in the entertainment casting industry and you're after extras, please, you know, if you need us to forward you Joe Branson's lengthy resume.
There's no way he could be an extra because the moustache is too distracting. Like,
I mean, maybe if it was an extra in a show about
moustaches,
dickheads. I don't know.
The first person to find it, I think there is going to be a bounty. First person to find the clip and share it with everyone from YouTube onto the Facebook group. We've got some unclaimed pedals and stuff here that prizes. So that's what I'm going to say. You win a prize for the first person to claim it. Anyway, how are you guys? Matt Knight, it's been a long Easter bank holiday weekend. Have you had much guitar playing time?
I have. Yeah, I think I played guitar all day. I've lost what track that is. Saturday?
It's Monday today.
Yeah, Saturday. Yeah, I play guitar all day, actually, from about 1 o'clock until about 9 o'clock in the evening.
Wow, that is quite a session.
Like, yeah, I just kind of sat down, played guitar, watched some YouTube videos, did a bit of practice, and kind of, like, just the day just, like, melted away. It was great.
Is Amy away at the moment?
She was away all day.
That's
she went to go and visit her friend's new cat, Didier.
Nice. probably a Chelsea fan.
It
was a very cute cat. I decided to stay here and play guitar with my own cat.
You did.
I've already got one. I need to see another one.
You did a Facebook Live this weekend. I think it was yesterday, wasn't it? And your own cat made a little cheeky little appearance.
Yeah, he loves being around you whenever you're doing something. He wants to be in the way, which is fine because I like him, so it's all right. But it was great. And then I saw that you've done this Facebook Live Facebook have changed the way you can do live videos now, so we can do two camera feeds and have an external audio source as well.
We're actually doing a cheeky little backdoor method to be able to do that onto the group. So for those, if you're listening to the podcast and you're not part of the group, which you should be, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, we found a way basically to do multi-camera and like proper audio onto Facebook Live. So what that means is we can do demos where there'll be one camera on someone playing, one camera on the pedal, for example, and we can have proper audio. So if I'm doing it at my end, I could use the two notes rig, or Matt, I guess you're probably going to mic something up, right?
Yeah, I was thinking I could use the Hughes and Kettner Redbox, because if we can take an external source, I can actually have a proper microphone for talking, and I could have a direct feed from the Hughes and Kettner Redbox as well.
Yeah, that sounds good. So yeah, do join the Facebook group, because that's kind of, I guess, when pedals come in, that's where we'll be going first before we do a proper demo on the YouTube page.
Yeah, I'm going to try every time something comes in, I'm going to try and do like an unboxing and then like short live demo, I think.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool. So what did you kick this off with yesterday?
So three of the four new pedals that we've got. So the Amoratsu from Ground Audio Control. I don't know if you had a chance to plug it in when you got it, Mark, but it is the loudest boost I've ever heard in my entire life.
100%. Yeah, I had it like dialed back on like one or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think we thought that when we heard the
Glass
yes,
boost?
Sure.
Clock. No, that's not one thing. I've gone completely blank. The pedal that won Gear of the Year.
The Echoline Roadrunner.
The Echoline Roadrunner, yeah. Yes. We thought that when we heard that as well. That was like a really incredible
I think this is
note.
Actually louder.
Wow.
I think this is almost beyond... Like, this is bordering pointlessly loud. It's an amazing sounding pedal. It sounds great. But I mean, I put it on my main pedal board after I finished doing the live demo to hear it through my amp. And I actually just had the volume... or what they call the gain control dialed at zero.
Really?
And it made everything sound better.
Right.
Zero and the bright switch on. I was like, this is just like the best buffer at the front of a pedal board ever.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, great, great pedal for that. I mean, especially with like a Les Paul that's slightly darker sounding, kind of brightens everything up really nicely, but super loud. I suppose if you've got like a cranked amp and you really want to like push the front end mega hard, that is definitely one of the best pedals for it. Really well built as well, nice screen print. Yeah, that was a great pedal. Then into the Drybell Vibe Machine.
Yes, this is the one that impressed me most on the demos, actually, because I plugged it in briefly at home and I couldn't really get the best out of it, but it sounded really good on your end.
Yeah, so it's basically a I hate to use the word clone, but I suppose it's based on a Univibe, so two modes, vibrato and chorus. And I never know why they called it chorus, because it doesn't sound anything like chorus in any way, shape, or form.
It's just kind of a slightly more warbly vibe, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah. But it's got two controls on the front, speed and intensity, which is what you'd expect. Two dip switches, one for chorus or vibrato, you kind of expect that. And then one for three different modes. And then there's seven trim pots on the side.
Yeah.
It's like the most tweakable pedal I think I've ever come across in terms of... like setting it up.
I think
like
that's
volume, like pitch, like everything all on the side.
I think
and then you've got a foot switch for an expression pedal as well.
Yeah, did you because you got the expression pedal with it as well, didn't you?
Yes, they have this like little one button tap. I think it's supposed to be either a tap tempo or you can plug an expression pedal in and use it for either speed or intensity. But I didn't bother. I just kind of set it up for kind of one speed and left it at that really. But that was a great sounding pedal in terms of Univibes. Yeah. Top notch without going for like the recent Korg new vibe, that like £600 expression pedal exact replica. This is like one of the best vibe pedals I think I've heard.
Super authentic, isn't it? Just sounds like,
yeah,
you know, like you hear on a Hendrix record or whatever.
Yeah, and I think they've just kind of, yeah, with the tweakability, I think they've kind of found every point on the circuit that you might want to adjust something and then just add the trim pot. But if you don't want to touch them, they're kind of set in the factory and away you go. And then the last one was the Rock Fabric Effects Aqualung, which has got the best LED I've ever seen in a pedal. It's a black light, so the same sort of light that you'd put over a note to check whether it's real or not.
Oh yeah, so it is, yeah.
So when you look at it, it looks really weird. It doesn't look like a normal LED.
It's kind of, isn't it like kind of purpley?
Room, it
like,
shows up amazingly.
Isn't it kind of purpley?
Yeah. It's like kind of a really rich purple.
Yeah.
But great sounding overdrive. Really clean, sort of like transparent, doesn't change much your sound. Quite bright sounding. Low and high cut options, which was quite nice when using it with a Les Paul and then swap into like a Strat. So that was just really nice. So I'm looking forward to demoing those. And we got sent last week the Anna Sounds Lazy Comp, which is a French company, and they do wooden topped pedals. So
oh,
all their
I saw
pedals
your,
are like
I saw your pictures of this. Yeah. This looks amazing.
Look yeah. really good.
So wooden topped and then like carved or etched on top with like not rather than an LED, it's like a green mirror, and then there's a light behind it that like lights up the A of their logo. But really nice sounding compressor, actually. Got a couple of trim pots inside for adjusting, but the main thing you've got on the front is just a mix control. So
More sort of vintage vibe, like the kind of the Pulp and Peel that we've seen, and the
more like a Dynacomp,
okay,
I suppose, or a bit more like the Bright Onion baking powder,
okay.
Same sort of vibe as that, really. Kind of set and forget, set the mix level, and away you go.
I'm looking forward to hearing that. We've been getting some, like, I know people always moan about like how much we talk about what pedals look like, but we're getting some great looking pedals, like that Amoratsu, brilliant little screen print on it. The Aqualung's got kind of almost like a kind of gig poster feel to it, and you know, this the Anna Sound, and also this Lunar Stone True Overdrive that we've got for demo pretty shortly has also got that big, you know, that oversized LED indicator in it, and they all look completely different, but they all look fantastic. And it's, you know, as we've talked about before, that's kind of one of the reasons that you choose one over the other, isn't it? Obviously,
the sound
is important, is the most important thing, but, you know, how they look on your board is becoming more and more important.
Yeah, I think you always get drawn, I mean, with so many choices, you kind of get drawn by the way that something looks first, don't you? So if you kind of don't stand out, it can be a bit difficult.
Yeah.
I think it's just part of a wider conversation in general, in that pedal companies are kind of realizing that branding is extremely important. And not only that, is some people are completely all about the aesthetic, like we are, you know.
Well, I mean, when you've got to post pictures on your Instagram,
completely,
it's got to look good.
Completely. But whenever this conversation comes up and people saying like, oh, you know, you stop talking about what pedals look like all the time, I always think back to, and I can't remember the brand, but it was, there was a pedal company that, it might have been Desart, who was it? They brought out a range of bass pedals, and they were on display in the GAC bass department when you were working there, and they were all metal, and the only way to differentiate between them was they had different shape, the etching.
Rocktron.
So what a completely ridiculous branding exercise.
Yeah.
Because the point is that they want you to buy all of their pedals.
Yeah.
However, as soon as those pedals are on a pedal board, you can't tell the difference between any of them.
They had like a tiny symbol on the front of them that was etched in you couldn't see in the dark. It was absolutely no way.
And that is always, for me, the argument of why it does matter what a pedal looks like.
Yeah.
Is because you need to be able to see it when you're playing.
So you can put them in a rack and then connect an ESA up
completely,
and never look at them ever again.
Well, you know, last week we were talking, I think it was last week, we were talking about, there was a brand in North London, Joe Brandt mentioned them, North Effects, I think they were called, or something like that, and they were just like a metal box with no writing on them whatsoever, but they were about £50 or £60.
Yeah.
I saw them in a shop on Denmark Street, and I was like, I have no idea what any of these pedals do.
Yeah, because there's no indicator. At least with the, you know, like the Vibe Machine and stuff. Obviously, it's called a Vibe Machine, so you know it's a Vibe. But it's got like wacky 60s writing on it. You know it's going to be a Univibe style pedal. I think, you know, it is important. It is important. And, you know, we'll get people comment on the group saying, you shouldn't talk about what pedals look like. It matters.
It does matter. You know what else it matters in? And it's the same conversation. Beer. Beer shops. Beer shops. When you see boring branded bottles, it's like, I'm not going to buy that because I'm not going to remember.
Why are you going to buy, I mean, you know, apart from the quality of the beer, why are you going to buy Heineken when you could buy Beaver Town, which has got like
incredible
artwork on it? So, Anyway.
I tell you the other thing, Matt Knight, is there was some proper faces going on during your Facebook Live.
Mate, I'm breaking out all the faces.
There were some proper faces.
Just as we're saying that it's important to have, you know, good branding on your pedals, it's important to pull a good face because people remember those faces.
There were some proper faces going on during Matt Knight's Facebook Live stream. And actually, my favourite point of the whole thing was during, I can't remember which one it was, but at one point you went, oh, sorry, I sort of got a bit lost there. I forgot what I was doing because you just got so into playing it.
I think that's the great thing, though. Sometimes when you get a guitar pedal in, we've had it before, we've demoed it, and then you kind of just like, you find that sound. You're just like, oh, this is great. I think that's always a testament to how good a pedal is, in our opinion, if we can kind of get lost in it.
Well, it was extremely entertaining. Me and Maddie were sat at home watching you on my phone. We both thought it was absolutely hilarious when you realised that you were you'd sort of woken up from the fact that you were doing a live stream.
How sad is it that Ella and I were both sitting watching it as well? There we go. Exciting stuff. Matty, maybe you should set up a Twitch channel, but not playing computer games, just playing guitar for hours.
Yeah, if only there was like a website that allowed you to do that.
Yeah, yeah. That's weird. Weird. Hmm. Anyway, I think we should move on. Jay Cross, you're on death's door.
I'm not feeling very well again today.
Joe Branton had it, what, a couple of weeks ago where he could barely talk.
It's all that snogging we've been doing.
That is true. Yeah, you two do a lot
great
of mouth to mouth. You two, great band.
Great band.
I think that you two may have caused this illness. Bono and The Edge.
Right.
I think just because how bad they are.
Right, okay.
They've just caused you to be ill.
Yeah, I did. I've spent the long weekend. I always get ill around long weekend, around like bank holidays and stuff. Christmas and Easter, I'm just always run down. I don't know why. I think it's my body being like, you've got time off, chill out, man.
Yeah, and then it attacks itself.
Yeah, completely. So I've spent all weekend sat on the sofa watching football, except for when I went to football and then went back to the sofa.
Yes, you made it out to football this weekend.
Yeah, I was feeling all right for a little bit. I dosed myself up on Lemsip and that's what I've been doing all day today. So that's enough of that sob story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, glad that you could make it in.
Completely.
Joe Branton obviously couldn't this week. So good to have two of you here. So, man, I've got some questions for you. I am moving house, as we've talked about a few times, and yes. I feel that I'm going to have a place to play guitar in the new house and a place to do streaming and stuff, as we've talked about, like streaming to the Facebook group. I need to build a pedal board for the basic streaming setup. So what I want on it is the two notes LeClean preamp.
Okay.
The two notes Torpedo cab amp, okay. Cab modeler. Plus also maybe I want to put on there the sound card. No, maybe I don't, because that's got to be near the computer. So basically I need those two, and maybe I'll just get some stuff off my board. I'll leave that on a separate board. I think what I need is just something I can easily plug in to do streaming. So the LeClean, the Torpedo cab, with a power supply that will power both of those, and I can plug straight into the wall. What are we saying, Matt?
I would go for... It's a shame that we don't live stream this sometimes, because it'd be quite cool to show, but I bought, for the almost exactly the same reason, a pedal train. Let me grab it. Which one is it? Metro 16.
Okay.
It was £44, and it was just for the size wise, it's absolutely perfect. It's about the depth of the two notes.
Okay.
The clean preamp, just 16 inches long, so it will take like 4 or 5 compact pedals.
Okay.
And you can fit a T-Rex power supply just about underneath. Like, I've got a Fuel Tank Junior under there, and it still sits on the little rubber feet.
Will one of the fuel tanks power both of those units, plus maybe another pedal?
What's the two notes?
What voltage are they?
12 volt, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think. So you'd probably have to go for...
They're both 12 volt?
No, the LeClean, I think, is 9 volt, and the
cab
is 12 volts.
Maybe if you bought the bigger fuel tank, or maybe the Dunlop brick, because the brick,
no,
the DC
the,
brick, got 12
the,
volt, volts
no,
out
the,
now.
The ISO brick has 8-9 volts and 218 volts.
Oh, that's no use, is it? I need 12.
That's rubbish. God damn,
The Chameleon will switch. You can switch each output from 9 to 12.
They're quite a lot of money, yeah, though, aren't they?
They are quite a lot of money, but they are very, very good.
Yeah.
I can't.
Those ones are isolated, aren't they? Because the standard fuel tank was never isolated, if I remember rightly.
Yeah. 12 volts is a weird...
It is. It is. And maybe I'll just use the power supplies that come with them. Maybe I'll just, like, tape a four-way to the board in some way and just like put those in there and leave them in there.
It's not very guitar nerds, though, is it?
It's not very guitar nerds, and I wanted a real easy solution. Maybe the other option.
I think you can buy a 12-volt. In fact, if you used... Yeah, so Gig Rig make a load of adapters for their generator power system.
Okay.
And they're effectively, they are just... They're universal. They don't have to work with their power supply, but they're designed to go on the end of... like any 9-volt out, and they're basically transformers. And they actually do one called, I want to say it's called the Supernova, and I think it does 9 and it transfers 9 to 12 volt. Yes, that's right. So you could buy one of them, and that's just a normal adapter to go on the end of a sort of any normal 9 volt output. It needs to be relatively high output, so it probably needs to be like 300 milliamps, which you think you can get off an ISO brick, and that will take the normal 12, normal 9, turn it into 12, and they're about 40 quid.
That's interesting. So that's well useful.
Yeah. So they do like isolated high output adapters for things like Strymon. So, or like the ES8, for example, needs 400 milliamps, 9 volt, but you want an isolated one. So they do a 400 milliamp isolated 9 volt that just goes on the end of a normal one.
Okay. So
I think Diego did something similar to that, didn't they?
When they did.
They did a voltage doubler though. They did one for an 18. I don't think they ever did a 9 to 12.
I can't remember if they did. I'm sure I remember seeing something. At the time, I was like, that's really impractical. But then I think it turned out I actually bought one because I needed one at some point.
Of course. I'll do some digging. So we think it's the Metro 16 is the board to go for that will house both
those. Metro 16. I think having that set up all the time, it comes with a nice little gig bag for 40 quid. I couldn't believe it when I bought it. I was like, £44 for that?
Yeah, that sounds well good.
Yeah, and it does work really well. It comes in a nice little gig bag that you can carry it around in.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
Interesting. So, okay, that sounds good. So that will we'll add that to the streaming setup this end. I think that sounds good. Shall we dive into some
news?
Good.
I don't like being the replacement for Joe Branton.
I sort of find it weird. We've stepped into what's the bizarro world in Star Trek called? Where they go through the mirror. It's just called the mirror world, isn't it?
Okay, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, like in DS9.
Yeah, I don't think there's a... I don't think they have a name for it.
I think they call it the mirror dimension.
Maybe.
Something like that. Where the... What happens in DS9? It's that the Cardassians are in charge of the space station.
Yeah.
And Kira works for them.
What? Do you say the Cardassians?
The Cardassians are... Yeah, it's a really weird mirror universe where the Cardassians are in charge of Deep Space Nine.
And also, there's like the rebel... There's like a band of rebels.
There
and,
is.
And Tuvok, who is in Voyager...
Yes.
...is there as an unnamed character.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. I really like that.
Yeah. Wait, which one's... Oh, Tuvok is the...
He's like a Vulcan...
Like half Vulcan, half human. Frey Bentos. Anyway, let's do some news. Give me one second. My list of news has disappeared. There we go. Right, so Walrus Audio have unveiled the Monument Harmonic Tremolo. Matt Knight, give us the deets.
I was thinking this when I read this. Do you think companies like Walrus Audio, when they started, had actually already built like 50 pedals?
They're just holding it back.
We'll just hold it back and just slowly release them over the course of like 5 years. Because I swear they have a new pedal every week.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not complaining, but it's just amazing. They are absolutely smashing pedals out at the moment. Considering I think they had a new pedal out like 2 weeks ago. And this is their harmonic tremolo. So the best way to describe that's the tremolo that's similar to the one that's on the Strymon Flint. That one that sounds almost like a... vibrato,
yes,
in a way. It's got that kind of real like deep thud to it, and I think it's based off an old photocell tremolo off some of the old Fenders.
Although it says harmonic, it's like gives a kind of a pitch quality to the trem, doesn't it?
Yeah, although I don't think it's actually physically doing anything with the pitch. It's just got that, but it's got that kind of feel to it, almost like a Univibe in some way.
Yeah.
Rate and depth controls, which you'd expect. Tap tempo, which I always think is really nice, with 4 different divisions. So you can, whatever you tap tempo in, you can automatically divide it by that if you want kind of like dotted notes or, you know, like a much quicker range than you can physically tap in. 5 different waveforms from the standard sine wave, square wave to up to kind of like more like a random volume, which is always really handy because you can actually then use it as a volume boost, which is one feature that's coming out on a lot of trems now. So you can actually almost dial the depth all the way down but turn the volume up so they work like a clean boost effectively.
It's like those it's like the wah pedals that allow you to put volume back in, I guess, because when you're with a tremolo you're purposefully taking some of the volume out at some points. So I guess to balance the signal back out, I guess that's why they have the volume control.
And I suppose if you're using something like an old Marshall, that something doesn't have like trem on it, but kind of you can push the front end and get a little bit of drive out of it, you know, that's perfect for this. Standard mono in, mono out. But what I thought was really cool is the foot switch is works in two ways. Standard, tap it on to turn it on, tap it again to turn it off. But you can actually hold it down and it works like a momentary control.
Okay.
So a bit like the Spark Booster Mini. So everything kind of ramps up to the control that's set physically on the panel. And then when you take your foot off, it all kind of dies down again.
Yeah. There's there was rumblings of a new TC Electronic pedal this week, and I'm not sure we can talk about it yet, even though there has been some stuff published online.
Well, I think there was some sort of like
accidental leak. I saw something on Amazon.
So we should not talk about it yet until we've had confirmation as to whether they've they want it to be talked about, I guess.
Well, I mean, it is
out there.
It is on the single biggest retail outlet in the entire world.
That is true. But you know,
I agree.
I don't want to get us in trouble. And we don't know all the details. But from the picture, it looks as though there's some cool features to that, similar to what Matt's talking about in terms of momentary foot switch / expression controls.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that when we actually know some proper details about it. So this looks really good, Matt, this Walrus audio. Again, you know, Walrus absolutely smashing it with the pedals at the moment. The 385, obviously, we loved last year. And what came out last week or a couple of weeks ago?
What did we have last week? Was it the Phaser? No, the Phaser was from before. I think there was a new Chorus, if I remember rightly.
Okay.
The Julia 2, was that? Because they had the Julia Chorus, and then I think they had a new one out last week. I mean, I was just having a look on their web, because they're also releasing like loads of limited edition stuff as well, which is almost direct through their website. So different artwork finishes. They had a load of like tattoo finish stuff go up, which was really nice. But just having a quick look, if I can remember what was new. No, I think it was something limited edition last week. But the one thing I still haven't tried, which I think was their first pedal, is their fuzz and tremolo with the joystick controls.
Yes.
Still need to try that.
I'm all about the joystick controls. Ever since I saw the first, I guess it was Devi Ever or Dwarfcraft that were doing it.
I think Devi Ever did it first. And I think there was something with Devi Ever and Dwarfcraft, which I don't know the full ins and outs of.
Yeah. But I just want a joystick pedal. That's all I want. See if Walrus can send us a demo one to check out. So, yeah, all good. Walrus going from strength to strength. Next up, Friedman Amps have announced the Pink Taco Mini and the Dirty Shirley Mini. Are these mini versions of already existing amps?
They're mini versions of already existing mini amps. I actually thought these already existed, but then I think I just got confused because they've actually already made head versions of both of these. And
right.
Now they're just available in a 1x... Bizarrely enough, 1x10 combo.
Interesting.
So, yeah, which I thought was, and I don't know, I'm assuming that's a very specific choice because sort of Dave Friedman's known for kind of doing, well, I mean, everyone does everything.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
In this kind of industry for a reason, but he's kind of really like down to minute details on kind of some of the designs, because I was actually watching a documentary about the guitars that they made, and they were talking about, I think they start off, for every build they do, for every run of build they do on guitars, they start with 500 pieces of mahogany, and then they work that down to 50.
In terms of what, the mahogany's not good enough?
In terms of the mahogany, yeah, in terms of the mahogany that they want for a particular resonance or grain on the guitar. So I think they kind of do the same thing with this. I'm sure there's a really good reason they're going for 110. I'm wondering whether it's because, I mean, they say it's got a surprisingly meaty tone. I wonder whether the 10, because there's slightly less bottom end and the amps are quite drivey, it gives you a little bit more punch.
Yeah, I mean, 10s are all about that, aren't they? They're all about the kind of punch. 12s are a bit more open sounding, and 8s generally are really boxy sounding, whereas 10s, I find, are actually a really nice compromise.
Yeah, so this is a 1x10, 20-watt combo, all tube, single channel. The Dirty Shirley Mini is, I think, one of the best heads you can buy for the money. I think they're $13 or $14.99, but the range of sounds out of them is absolutely incredible. And the great thing is the effects loop that's in this is the same effects loop that he designed for the new Wampler Bravado amplifier.
Okay.
So really transparent and designed to take pedals like really well. Because obviously when people are using these amps, they're generally using a lot of gain, they're using humbuckers, but a lot of people out there are using, you know, a lot of delay pedals, modulation effects, so ultra transparent effects loop as well. We've got two EL84s, simple controls, gain, master, bass, middle, treble, and then a three position, like what they call gain structure switch,
okay,
which isn't necessarily like clean crunch lead, but it just changes the kind of amount of gain you're getting from the gain control, basically.
Yeah.
All USA made, and yeah, coming in at only about, well, they say 9.5 inches deep by 15.5 inches wide, so actually pretty diddy, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Overall,
I don't mean to, I don't mean to cut back to the aesthetics, but I was very disappointed when I looked up the pink taco to discover that it's in fact black.
It's not pink or a taco.
I know. It would have been good if they'd done like, yeah, some sort of like taco themed front in,
or a pink themed front. What, or just it, like a bit of pink trim or something like that.
What if it comes wrapped in greaseproof paper? That'd be wicked. Like you get like in from a Mexican place. That'd be brilliant. It's good that we're talking about these, but for me, this just makes me think like, shouldn't Marshall be doing this?
Well, I mean, completely. Completely.
Like, a vintage looking amp really, with loads of like really good modern features,
yeah,
that's pushing the technology forward in a really good little package that's not mega money. Like, I mean,
it's all built in the US.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, it just seems really obvious. You know, we talk about like what Marshall could do to revive the brand. Like, just make this and put Marshall on it.
Well, yeah, well, I mean,
I think
completely.
I'm sure there was some sort of tie with him doing something, not with Marshall, but I think modding Marshall's like way back in the day. But even like old time Marshall artists have moved to Friedman.
Yeah, yeah, Foo Fighters and biggest, stuff.
I was going to say the Foo Fighters. I think he's got like 100. He's got 6 of the 100-watt like BE100s, which is their 2-channel 100-watt high gain Marshall.
Yeah,
effectively, you know, multi-channel British style amplifier. I mean, it's as close as you can get to saying Marshall. We love Marshall amps, so we modded them and changed them to a point that we really liked, without actually saying Marshall in the title.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think they just aren't that bothered anymore?
I think maybe just the money to be made off headphones and sunglasses and stuff
completely.
Is
yeah,
pretty
yeah,
easy
yeah.
money. And this is quite a difficult thing to do. And the amp market is shrinking. We know that. So
I think as well, sometimes it comes down to the tech that you've got, because I can't remember when Aid started at Orange, but obviously he's designed now what are some of the most iconic Orange amps of all time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think sometimes you just have to get an engineer on board that's like, right, we've got to do this.
Completely.
We've got to do this. And yeah. Maybe it's about who you've got at the time, who's basically sitting behind the soldering iron actually designing these amplifiers.
I think also, if you remember as well, you know, there was quite a long period where Orange released a lot of stuff that, not that it wasn't good, but it just didn't connect, you know, like the initial Rockoverbs and things like that.
Yeah.
Just were big, heavy boxes. And then I think they started going, oh, you know, things like Tiny Terror. Suddenly it was like, okay, well, you know, we're selling a few of these, but we could, you know, by trying something, being a bit risky, we could take a huge part of the market. You know, there's a need for smaller but still fairly powerful amps. I just wonder whether someone like Marshall can actually afford to do that. Can they afford to take the same
take
sort of risk? That,
yeah, completely.
Because, you know, Orange, at the point, I think, where Aid came in, or, you know, early, when they came back into the UK, they had nothing to lose, really, because there wasn't really a brand at that point. So they could try a few things, whereas, you know, Marshall are so established and have got, you know, things like the booming headphone business that they're doing. Could they afford to take a risk like the Tiny Terror? Maybe not. But anyway, let's do one last bit of sad news. Alan Holdsworth, who I have to admit, not someone that I know a huge amount about. Matt, I know you're a big fan. Alan Holdsworth passed away this week. Age 70, is that right, Matt?
Yeah. Yeah, just yesterday, so the day that we were recording this. So, yeah, the 16th of April. Yeah, I mean, I was saying to Jay before we started recording, I suppose in a way maybe a guitarist that a lot of people don't actually know and maybe not directly listen to his music, but maybe some of the people they've listened to have probably been, he's been a big influence of. And he actually, like, especially with a lot of the kind of like modern sort of djent music and things like what Meshuggah have been doing for a long time, all come down to sort of Alan, like, the guys in Meshuggah, their biggest influence guitar playing wise is Alan Holdsworth, and you can hear that a lot in the music. A lot of the kind of modern guys like Pliny and stuff like that all take from that kind of fusion style playing. And yeah, he's kind of like just this, he was just this northerner that was basically just an absolute virtuoso on guitar. Had a really unique playing style, had a really unique theory style as well. He was completely self-taught, so he like invented his own scales and then gave them weird names like X3. This is the X3 scale. And there's one of his tutorial videos, the really famous one, he's talking about scales and he's like, this scale wouldn't make sense to anyone but me, but this is how it goes. And then he like plays it and then it's just like this chord chart next to him and it's just like Y9 on like this board.
It's a classic.
Just like this really like crazy mind, but influenced so many people in terms of kind of even like his guitar sound, that like compressed like chorus delay sound that you hear, like loads of people trying to copy. And also a real famous user of the Magic Stomp, I believe. The Magic Stomp and the Yamaha UAD-99, which was the precursor to that. In fact, I'm sure one of his pedal boards had four Magic Stomps on it at one point.
It's not often that we bring up the Magic Stomp on this podcast, but when we do, it's always for a real serious good reason.
Yeah.
I say good reason. It's not for a good reason this time, but it's, you know, it's worth pointing out.
And a Kiesel Carvin endorsee.
Oh, really? Just recently, I take it?
No, I think he's played Carvin, like, headless guitars for a long time. But I know that, like, Kiesel Carvin is kind of like a newer thing. They're like, they are absolutely knocking out of the park when it comes to guitars at the moment. Especially they're doing loads of Facebook Live factory tours, Pick Your Guitar Live. And I think now he's sort of come to the forefront more as like Alan Holdsworth being an endorsee, but I think he's played Carvin guitars for a long time.
Isn't there like some famous pictures of him playing something headless? Didn't he play like those Teufel guitars?
Yes, well, he's obviously also famous for playing the Synth Axe.
Yes.
The most expensive guitar failure of all time. In fact, he was probably one of the only regular users apart from Gary Moore in Out in the Fields, which I think he played.
What a video.
What a song.
Yeah.
what a guitar player. And I remember asking Gary about it, and he said he absolutely hated it. I was like, oh, didn't you play a Synthax and out in the field? He went, yeah, it was rubbish. I mean, rubbish wasn't his word. Like, obviously, I'm not going to repeat what his exact phrase was on the podcast. But Alan Holdsworth, I think he actually owned two or three. And he was one of the only guys that could really ever make it work. But yeah, the Synthax. And if you're not sure what that is, I just go on YouTube, Synthax, and you will see, I think it was £12,000 in about 1985.
Wow, that's a lot of money. Yeah. A lot of money.
For a guitar that was basically an unplayable synthesizer.
So if people want to go and check out some Alan Holdsworth, and I think I kind of want to, because like I said, I don't really know a huge amount about him. I know that he is this kind of like weird experimental fusion-y player. What's the album to track down?
There was an album in the 80s that, to be honest, I've just always browsed through kind of his stuff because he's got a long list of records. I would just go Heavy Machinery was an album that he did in like 96. To be honest, anywhere you go, it's going to be incredibly hardcore. So I would just go for like some YouTube videos first, because yeah, it gets pretty hardcore into the fusion. But Metal Fatigue from 1985 is probably his most famous song, and it's under 5 minutes, so well within listening territory. Okay. For you, Mark.
Good. Yeah, I think I might just be able to manage that. I listened to like I said, I'm moving, so I've been cleaning out like loads of records and found a pile of 7 inches today, and I listened to a 7-inch that has, I think it's 9 songs in less than 5 minutes on like that side one and side two are less than 5 minutes combined. That's what I'm all about. We get nine songs in the time in the space of one Alan Holdsworth jam. So
good.
Yes, if you're listening to experimental math rock this week, pour one out for Alan Holdsworth.
Can I just drop in one piece of slightly more light-hearted news?
You can.
Which I actually meant to bring up last week.
Okay.
And this is more sort of popular culture news rather than guitar news specifically. But have you seen the lineup for the band lineup for the upcoming Korn tour in South America?
I saw this bit of news. Very, very weird. Do you want to explain what's so weird about it?
So Korn, the seminal detune hero band of the 90s through to
the band that made you buy a 7-string.
The band that made me buy a 7-string. Are about to embark on a tour of, I believe, South America.
Okay.
And Fieldy, the bass player, cannot make it.
He's doing another Fieldy's Dreams album.
Apparently, his absence has not been explained.
They don't know where he is.
I guess they don't know where he is.
Just
so instead,
look for a car filled with like weed smoke, I'd imagine. didn't he at one time? Oh no, that was someone else. Don't worry.
Instead of Fieldy, Korn are being joined on tour by 12-year-old Ty Trujillo, Rob Trujillo.
Trujillo.
Trujillo?
Trujillo. Let's
I'm
go.
Not sure. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Trujillo?
The geezer from Metallica's son.
Yes.
Who is 12 years old.
Of course.
And which I actually don't think is the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing is that in every video and picture I found of him, he's just playing a P bass.
Of course, that's what you need for Korn.
So like, I don't know how he's gonna make it sound.
He's gonna buy
right.
An Ibanez K5.
That's
was
the
it
Fieldy one, yeah.
Get that. So who's in Korn? David Silver is not in them anymore.
David Silviera, I don't think
Silviera.
I don't think he's in
them.
He was
the drummer, right?
He was the drummer.
No, David Silver, the football player.
Yeah.
You're right, okay.
I don't know who plays drums for me anymore. For a while, it was Aaron Cometbus, I think, which is
no,
weird.
That was like when they first started. Legendary East Bay punk drummer, Aaron Cometbus.
I think Monkey and Head.
Monkey and Head are
both back in.
Yes,
it.
They are. Yeah, yeah.
Head, only one of them
head,
left.
He, well, he only head to Christ and yeah. Then came back again.
I want to see Monkey to Christ.
and Jonathan Davies, I assume.
Yeah. Maybe he's still there.
So I think it's like I think it's most of them.
Yeah, because David Silveira left first, didn't he?
He left to go and be a Calvin Klein model.
He did, yeah, underwear model. Yeah.
I don't know what he's
crazy
doing now. But
I just want to know what field he's doing. Like, I literally don't care in the slightest about Korn. This news is funny to me. But
I mean, what I find also funny is I was just having a look who the members are, and Fieldy's first name is Reginald.
I want to know what Reggie is. What's Fieldy's second name?
I can't. Arvizu?
Okay.
Arvizu?
Arvizu.
Reginald Arvizu.
Okay, good.
And the drummer is Ray Luzier.
Okay. Born to lose you.
There we go.
Yeah, I just want to know what Fieldy's up to. I don't care about Korn in the slightest.
When I saw Korn in... when I saw Korn in 2002, is that right? I would have been 14 in 2002. Maybe it was 2003. I think it was 2002. When I saw Korn at the Docklands Arena, playing in front of like 25,000 people or however many people were there, I reckon that Fieldy's commitment was on the rocks then, because that Fieldy's Dreams record was blasting over the stereo in between each band, and I can only assume that Fieldy was like, listen, I'll do this tour, but only if you play my record constantly.
That's so, your homework for this week is to go and listen to Fieldy's Dreams, assuming it's on Spotify. There's a high chance that it won't
Tidal
exclusive for that one.
Here's a weird tie-in with bass players and London Docklands around the same tie-in. I was saying to you guys, I got to hang out with one Alderette of Mars Volta fame earlier this week, and worked out that when I saw the Chili Peppers in 2002, which was my first proper gig, like big gig that I went to, the Mars Volta supported on their first ever UK tour, and he was playing bass. So
we
worked out that he was playing bass, first ever proper gig that I went to.
That's awesome.
It was a bit like, that is well weird.
We should have talked about that.
Everything comes around.
Let's talk about that more next week, about your hanging out with him.
It will upset Joe.
Joe needs to be here,
Joe found out that Matt was hanging out with Juan Alderete over text message, and like...
He just put, what?
Yeah, he was really, and then really upset.
And then he didn't message for like another few days after that. If you want to hear the sound of a man actually explode with rage next week, Matt, you need to really like hype up your story about what and Juan got up
especially
to.
Especially when we went out for vegan food. And
You'll hear Joe's heart actually blow up. We are running short on time, so let's dive into some...
questions.
Good. Alex says, anyone seen a band with two guitarists and a drummer but no bass player? The current band project looks like that's how it's going. I'd like to listen to how others may have approached it, but don't know any yet. Jay Cross.
It's not something that I ever endorse.
No, absolutely not.
It's difficult. I mean, there's a band who I'm good friends with, who I like a lot, from London, called Doe. They do it, and I've seen it be good, and I've seen it be very bad. You've got to have a good sound engineer, and you've got to have a good... the longer they've been going, the more they've figured out that the two guitar amps need to sound very different. And unless you... are making like a real conscious effort to do it, it is very difficult. It's definitely better than going the other way, which is going just one guitar and drums.
No, well, that's just, not just the other go way. Bass and drums.
Well,
I'm
bass and drums
that.
I actually think works a lot better.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot easier to put top end onto a bass.
Yeah.
As opposed to getting decent sounding low end from a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a band I've seen a few times called Japan Droids. Who do that? They are one guitar and drums, and the on record they sound great, like really good on record, because they're probably using a bass on the record. But live, when I saw him, the guitar player was using two twins, two Marshall 4x12s, and two Ampeg 8x10s.
Yeah.
But it still just sounded like one geezer playing guitar.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult. You have to make sure that you are getting two very distinctive guitar sounds. I would suggest that at least one of these guitarists would need to be using humbuckers.
Yeah.
And they would need to concentrate on the sort of thuddier low end of the riffs. And you want to be able to like dial up the mids and stuff. And then the guitar player, the other guitar player will want to, you know, make sure that there's not quite as many, as much low end in there so that you get that differential. But my overriding, my overriding theory on this would be make friends with the bass player.
Yeah, I mean, Alex says there's going to be two guitar players.
Well,
just do the classic thing and force the one who the rest of the band likes the least to play bass.
That's how I ended up playing bass.
Same here. 100%. Same here. And
playing bass is great because, like, it's so much easier than playing guitar.
Yeah.
So much easier than playing guitar. Occasionally, when you're playing bass, you can take one hand off of the fretboard.
I do that quite a lot. It's good. It's a classic Lemmy technique.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be my suggestion. Talking about Doe, who is a band that I really like. Like you say, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But for me, they kind of exemplify, like, and like, if they were listening to this, they'd definitely hate this and probably hate me for saying this. That band's got so much potential, and every time I go and see them, I'm just like, oh, this would be so good if they had a bass player. It'd be so good.
I mean, I've said it to them a few times, and they like not having it. I don't know.
I guess it's part of their signature sound, but
recently it's been sounding good.
Okay. I'm not sending
for the early shows were I didn't think it sounded
I'm not sending for about a year. So yeah. I just love bass. Bass is the best sounding one.
I definitely think that if you're going to sacrifice, I realise I shouldn't be saying this on a guitar podcast, but if you are going to sacrifice one instrument of the classic three, the guitar is the easiest one to sacrifice because you can make a bass sound like a guitar, but you can't really make a guitar sound like a bass. Yeah. I guess you could go down the route of having an octave pedal, but it depends what you're playing. You know, if you're playing fast
and loads of chords and stuff,
then it's not going to track.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And it's not like a bass. It's a guitar with an octave pedal on it.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
Michael says, quick question of an issue that's plagued all of us at one point or another. How to attach hook and loop tape, because Velcro is a brand name and not a product, to pedals. So A, sticks well enough so the pedals don't move around when transported. B, can be removed without damaging the pedal or labels. If I come to sell anything. Any suggestions? Matt Knight.
Yes. I actually saw a video on this once before. Masking tape.
Okay, in what way?
So masking tape over the base of the pedals, so basically you cover the entire base in masking tape and a little bit around the edges so you get a decent stick, and then put Velcro onto that because it actually sticks. So it sticks to masking tape, but masking tape comes off easy enough that it won't damage anything in the process.
I actually saw
a video of someone doing that so they could stick their Klon to a pedal board so they didn't ruin the serial number on the bass. Wow. So I actually saw someone cut out, in fact, actually, if there's a serial number you don't want to lose, cut out a piece of paper the same size as the pedal, put that on the bass, and then masking tape. So I'd say if you're looking at the bottom of the pedal, say from like left to right, so you cover a little bit of each edge and then the entirety at the bottom and work your way all the way down to the bottom of the pedal, and then stick Velcro on that. I've also found that there is pedal board tape that you can buy. The problem I've got with that is it's almost too strong. Like, people love using it, but it's like Lego in a way. And because when you click it into place, it's almost impossible to lever out unless you can get a screwdriver in between. So I just buy really decent quality Velcro.
Do you know what I've always done?
Hook tape.
Well, indeed, yeah, hook and eye tape. I've always just put the pedal on there, just wiggled it left to right a little bit when it's on there, and that makes all the hooks go into the eyes, but it's still easy enough to get off if you need to. But like the pedals on my pedal board at the moment that have actually got Velcro on there, you can hold that up and they'll stick there fine.
The one that I've found good success with recently is, although unfortunately you buy it in smaller amounts but you need less of it because it's better, is actually the Velcro that you buy from places like hardware stores like B&Q or Homebase in the UK, because guys use those to like hang their tools in workshops. So you do like a row of Velcro actually onto a brick wall, and then you can like hang stuff off it.
And
I do that for all my like four-way plugs on my desk and stuff, and it works really well. So yeah, just don't buy cheap stuff, because it's easy to go on Amazon and buy like 20 meters for £5. But generally the problem you always get is the glue. And then the glue never sticks to the bottom of the pedal. And then when you go to take the pedal off, the Velcro stays stuck together, but your pedal comes off from
The worst.
So I guess going back to what Michael said at the start, don't buy hook and loop tape, buy Velcro.
The proper branded stuff.
Yeah.
I think the worst Velcro or the worst hook and eye tape that I've ever experienced is, do you remember the Stag pedal boards, the UPC ones?
Yeah. UPC came with 688.
Absolutely the worst Velcro ever. Like, the glue on it was just so bad that it wouldn't even stick to the pedal when you hadn't put it on the board. You just, like, put it on and it just fall off straight away. Awful, awful. Let's move on. Reese says, I have a 2013 Gibson Les Paul Junior. It sounds great, but I have a spare set of Seymour Duncan hot-rodded humbuckers. So should I switch the pickups or should I keep the originals in? Now, this confused me to begin with. I think what he means by Les Paul Junior is LPJ.
Yeah, okay. Because I saw this and I couldn't quite get my head around it.
Yeah, because Les Paul Junior obviously normally denotes P90s and special two P90s. So if it was just a junior with one P90, it would be a very difficult job
unless
to then
put... Unless it was a junior special, but I don't think they did any of those in 2013.
No, I don't think they've done juniors with humbuckers for a long time.
I'm pretty
time.
Sure it would have been an LPJ.
Yeah, I think so too.
So the LPJ was a guitar that Gibson brought out around this time, maybe a little bit earlier, but it was a guitar that was really hideously named because it led to confusing situations such as this.
Yeah, people going, have you got any of those Les Paul Juniors? Like, no, they don't make them anymore. What?
Yeah, exactly that. And people getting a bit angry because they did make these LPJs.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, but it's not. Anyway, they were great. Really, really cool, budget, unfinished, unfinished, not lacquered, cheap Les Paul Studios, basically. And the first run had these really horrible-looking EMG-style covers on them.
Oh, they were really bad.
And if I remember correctly, they were actually glued to the top of the pickup.
Yeah, I think so.
They weren't actually just covers. They were properly glued. And it was one of those very, very weird things that Gibson appeared to only do to sort of say, well, yeah, of course you can get stuff without these pickups on. You just got to buy a Les Paul Studio for an extra £300.
Because that was kind of the only difference. Like, they were a mahogany body and the studio.
Absolutely.
Did they do faded studio still or were they all gloss?
I think at that time they were probably
all gloss.
Right, so it was the finish was the main difference, but also you got cheap and nasty looking pickups in the LPJ.
But then a couple of years later, they brought out a new range of LPJs that didn't have those. They just had like normal humbuckers in and they looked absolutely phenomenal.
So anyway, this 2013 one's probably got the ones that kind of look like EMGs in there, but just do we know what they actually were? Were they like 490?
I think they were four.
I don't actually know. Pretty sure they were probably just 490s.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think they've ever used anything different. Yeah, 490R and 498T.
Do we think we should switch in the Seymour Duncans?
If that's what's in there, if it's a 490R and a 498T, then absolutely.
Because
I've never liked
those pickups in the slightest, and I always thought that it was a very, very weird thing for Gibson to continue to run with.
I think they're good if you just want to do high output metal, because they're quite brash, those pickups, and for like more heavy stuff they're actually quite good.
Those are Gibson's favorite pick, they're in like Les Paul Customs. It's nuts. I really never understood why. I think they sound very boring and very
they're brash, but they've got nothing to back it up, whereas I think actually the hot rodded humbucker set is a JB and a something else. Matt, help me out. You've got a...
In the hot rodded humbucker set, it was a 59 junior.
No, 15...
And like a jazz? Is that what they call it?
It's a J... I think, isn't it a JB and a 59?
Do you know what? Let's just use the power of the internet.
Yes. It's definitely a JB in there.
JB and a jazz.
Yeah, so JB and the bridge. And what I really like about those is they are... If you want to do more metal-y stuff, more heavy stuff, they're brilliant, but they also clean up really nicely if you roll the volume back. And the jazz is just a really good neck pickup anyway, like nice and rich and but nice and clear sounding.
Yeah. It's their most popular set, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
They pair together so well.
Yeah. So, yes, I think what we're saying, Reese, is definitely switch those out, and you'd probably be able to flog the other ones. If someone's got like an Epiphone or something, that would be a decent upgrade.
Yeah,
you know,
completely.
If you make... 30 or 40 quid back on them, then that's you've not done bad at all. And with that, we are up at time, so we should wrap this up. Thanks very much for listening this week. If you want to get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content each and every week, you can head to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the podcast. At the $1 tier, getting an ad-free episode early every week. At the $5 tier, you get access to not only the extra half an hour of content every week, but all the other stuff we're doing. So that includes Joe Branton's Branton's Ranton, his series about the things that he hates. Also the upcoming Gear of Yesteryear, I think we're going to call it, maybe. I just came up with that. I think that's good. And also all the interviews that are happening. We're doing like one special interview a week at the moment, where we put up the teaser in the main, like a 5-minute teaser in the main podcast feed. But then like usually between 45 minutes and an hour's worth of interview on Patreon as well. So you can get that at the $5 tier. And then from the $10 tier, you get your name out, read out, like these people have. What am I going to do? What song?
Do you want to read it? And I'll do, because you've never read it before.
Yeah, okay, I'll read it. Read I can it read. I'll do I the, can read.
Oh, no, but now I've got to come up with a song.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blair Toms, Carlos Mancher, Andrew Macro, Mark Cross, J.D. Short, Andrew McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Tomsett, Laurie Anstis, Luke Graffit, and then last on the list we have Colin Anderson. Ah, there we go. Thanks very much.
What is that? Is it an iPhone ringtone or something?
No, it's a theme tune. I can't think what. If you know, let us know in the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, or you can follow us on Twitter @guitar nerds, on Instagram @guitar nerds as well. Matt's doing loads of good work over there. And on YouTube, we had our biggest month ever on YouTube for new subscribers. If you're not subscribed, youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.